like the police knew who he was before they got here.
From iHeart Podcasts.
The medical school dean at USC was leading a secret double life.
He's breathing right now?
Yes, he's absolutely breathing. I'm a doctor, actually.
A story about money, power, and corruption.
When people fall in line, they fall in line.
Looking back, I realized, oh, everyone knew.
I'm Paul Pringle, an investigative reporter for the LA Times. Listen to Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, I'm Jay Shetty, and I'm the host of the On Purpose podcast, and I had the opportunity to talk to one of Hollywood's major icons, Michael B. Jordan. In our conversation, Michael shares the highs, the lows, and everything in between, offering a genuine glimpse into his world.
The closest to getting what you want is always the hardest. People give up right before they get what they've always wanted to get.
Listen to On Purpose with Jay Shetty on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Ethnically Ambiguous, a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Hello, this is Ethnically Ambiguous. I'm Shireen.
Hello, this is Ethnically Ambiguous. I'm Anna.
Today, we are talking about some more serious topics. We get into the earthquakes that happened earlier this month in Turkey and Syria, and why sanctions are making Syria's recovery even worse than it should be. And we also get into some fun talk at the beginning, at the end. So that's, you get some reward for listening to us talk about trauma, at least.
Woo-wee! Who are we? Where did we come from? Who do we become? What is it to be? What to be is it? Where are we? Who are my parents? Where are my pants? Why were we born? We are Ethnically Ambiguous.
Hi, Anna.
Hi, Irene. Get it?
Yeah, like I do.
Because it's Shireen.
Yeah.
Your nickname. You know how everyone calls you Sherry? Just joking.
No one calls me that, listeners.
I'm mixing it up and I'm now calling you Reen or Reenie.
People have called me Reen before. Reen.
Okay.
Not Reenie. I mean...
Reendy?
Maybe that sounds too girly. I don't know why no one ever called me Reenie, but...
Reenie?
Reen was one of them. I always was jealous of people with a one-syllable nickname, you know?
Reen.
Yeah.
I don't have any nicknames, unfortunately, because my name is so short.
Yeah. Becca says Reenie is cute. Thanks, Becca. I appreciate that. I love a nickname, so call me nicknames.
Ace's nickname is longer than his name.
His full name, you mean?
Oh, I guess. No, not his full name.
Is it his full name or is it his nickname?
His name is Ace.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, obviously, his full name is Ace Biscuits. Detective Ace Biscuits, attorney at law.
Yes.
And then, but his nickname. Oh, so, but we call him Ace.
Mm-hmm.
But then his nickname is Nani.
Nani? Why is it Nani?
I don't know. I just call him Nani.
That's cute. Yeah, having a pet has made me... I mean, I talk in like just a different voice entirely when I am at home now with my cat, but
right.
Yeah, I call her a bunch of things. It's kind of crazy what pets do to you.
Yeah, you have to have 100 nicknames for them or they're not real.
Yeah. Like her name is, she's a cat, but her name is Bunny. So I'll call her My Bunny or Bun Bun or like anything that has to do with like that word.
Billy Bob.
I don't know. Billy is exactly, that's her nickname as well. Billy Bob Bunny.
Billy Bob Bunny Thornton.
Yeah.
yeah, I call Ace all sorts of Acey Basie.
Yeah, nicknames are just so cute. Like, even for people, I think it's just so...
Boobop?
I don't know, endearing.
Boobop's a big one. Boobop.
For Ace?
Yeah, Boobop.
Boobop.
My little Boobop.
That's cute. Do you want to know something really cute? Speaking of bops.
Yeah.
Whenever I come home, me and my cat touch noses. Like, you know what I mean? She'll like lean bop? Over and we touch. Yeah, we bop. That's our greeting.
I do that sometimes. I'll pretend Trim and I are kissing, but he's mostly just sniffing my face.
Yeah, I think Bunny just thinks I'm just a giant cat, you know? So when I come home, she's like, oh, here's big cat.
Here's big cat.
And we just bump noses because her tree is next to the door when I come in. So it's like basically at my level when she puts her head out and I come in. And so it's pretty cute.
She goes, hello.
Exactly. Exactly. She is so cute.
She goes, hi. Welcome home. So... I made some dinner.
Exactly. I wish. I
Boobop.
Wish. Boobop.
When are Boobop and Bunny gonna meet?
I would.
How old is Bunny?
Bunny? Well, did I tell you that her age is like kind of in question?
Well, I mean, she's kitten. How in question can it be?
Well, when they found her, I was told she was 6 weeks, but when I took her, that time didn't add up because she looked a lot bigger than the 9 weeks or 8 weeks she would have been.
Mm-hmm.
And so the vet thinks she's around 4.5 months. Like, that's like an estimate, just based on her size. So yeah, she's 4.5 months. She hasn't been spayed yet because she's getting that done in about a month. I tried to put on a harness on her today. Not a fan. But we do go around in a sling, just around the house in the backyard. I put her in a sling and she likes to be in the sun. Yeah, I have issues. I've just developed a whole other set of issues.
That's okay.
She's worth it. She's so cute. But yeah, I want her to be social with other animals for sure. There are a lot of cats that like roam around the backyard. And so when she looks outside, she like lock eyes with them. And then they'll get so close to each other, like through the door. And nothing will happen. She doesn't meow or anything, but she's like fascinated with this other cat. So I don't think she's afraid of them. I think she's just like, I want to get her. I want to have her like have some pet pals, you know, pet pals.
Pet pals.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was just going to say, I mean, I guess she's a cat, so it's not like you can take her on, like, pet dates. I guess you could.
Well, I tried. My friend recently got 3 kittens all at the same time. They're all siblings that were in the same litter. Like, they were the entirety of the litter. And they all have those opposable thumbs. Those, not opposable. Yeah, they all have the mittens. They all have the mittens.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't realize how much bigger they were than her. And she did not have a nice time. She was so mad at me. She was just like... did not want to get out of my sling. She was so mad.
Well,
and I think it was my fault. I think I put her in an environment that was only their scent. Like, I think I just went about it all wrong. I was too like, oh my God, let's do that. And like, I think I have to like really be slow next time with like, oh, this is what this is what this cat smells like. So you don't get weirded out and then like vice versa. I don't know if that makes sense.
No, it does. But I also think like cats are so like sensitive to meeting other cats.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They're all just like, I guess, trying to fuck around and find out.
I think every cat thinks it's the only cat alive or like that exists. I think that's what the cats think. So when they see another cat, they're like, excuse me?
I do think cats are very, we're all very similar in the sense that like, not we as, I don't know why I said like we, like we're cats, but like, they're like, don't touch me.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know you. Get away from me.
They have to earn your trust, which I think is cool. So when they pick you, you're like, I feel special.
Yeah. Yeah, or they're like, ugh, you know, like.
Well, apparently there's a reason.
They can be so like, ugh.
Yeah. Well, apparently there's like a reason why sometimes at like a party, a cat will gravitate towards the person that like has allergies or just like is more standoffish because that appeals to them more than the person that's like, come here, kitty. So I think that's really funny because like a lot of people that are allergic to cats will be like, cats always come up to me like at a gathering.
Right.
And I think it's really entertaining. That's like, that's the reason why cats are attracted to that presence that's just like, I don't want to be around a cat. I'm too cool for that.
Well, also, I think cats are, they're good at, like, sniffing out, like, a mark.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they're like, this fool's a buster-ass mark. Let me just roll up onto him.
Cats are so smart. I love cats. Cats.
Yeah, so, like, love cats, don't be a buster-ass mark, and everything will be fine.
Yeah, a lot of the memes that Anna and I said back and forth is just, like, animal stuff. And a lot of them are cats, and they're the best. I love cats, and everyone already knows that. This is not an episode about cats. Maybe it should be eventually.
No, we have more pressing matters to discuss. I do want to say real quick, I am listening to the Pamela Anderson book, her new book, Love, Pamela. Mm-hmm. And
what do you think?
I love it. I have 15 minutes left, maybe less, of the book. I really enjoy it. I think Pamela deserves the world.
I've been watching some of her recent interviews, and she just seems so genuine and like misunderstood.
Yeah.
And I'm so mad that that show got made about her, because, and I'm mad at everyone involved, because like, what kind of person decides to play someone without their consent? I just think it's like bonkers to me.
I think it happens so much, right? Usually the people are dead though, for the most part, but like,
that's what I mean, like that's like maybe skirting around consent, but like when someone's alive and you're portraying this like really traumatic like moment in their life, and then you find out that none of the people on the show even talk to the real people that experienced that trauma.
Yeah,
I think it's just fucked up. It's really fucked up.
I will say, I thought, what's his name, Sebastian Stan did a really great job as Tommy Lee. I like kept forgetting it was not Tommy Lee.
Oh, really? I never saw the show.
Like, I started to be like, wait, what does Tommy Lee look like? I like couldn't remember, because when I was listening to the book, picturing him as Sebastian Stan.
That's funny.
Because I think I just, I did not engage with the Tommy Lee and Pam of it all when I was growing up. So I didn't really have a lot of sense of them, but
I think we were a little bit young for that. I think it was like just before.
Right. I mean, I knew like who Pamela Anderson was, but I also mm-hmm. just wasn't really engaging on same. That culture level.
Like, I think the first sex tapes we heard about was like Paris Hilton and Kim Kardashian, when really like hers was the first one to like have like this exposure, and she was the first one to be violated in that way, I guess.
Yeah. And you know what's interesting? Actually, I'm going to look this up real quick. Paris Hilton sex tape, not the sex tape, but I'm curious about the release, because something very interesting comes up in the book. What year? So 2004, right? So he, mm-hmm. that's when he released it. But then,
who's, in the, for Pam?
It was from May 2001, right?
Mm-hmm. I
Pamela
think, I
Anderson
know.
Was married to the guy who released her sex tapes, Rick Solomon, the poker player, from 2007 to 2008, and then 2014 to 2015. So she married and divorced him twice. And I don't get it, because I'm like,
wasn't it the whole thing that like she had to like make a deal because they were going to put it out anyway or something?
Oh, Pamela Anderson?
Or was that?
Or wait, what? Or Paris?
I don't know. I thought it was Pamela. Maybe I'm getting confused.
Based on my understanding of Paris, it was potentially released without her. I can't remember. I she talked about it in her documentary.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's odd. And it's odd that Pamela Anderson married a man who released a sex tape of another woman after her life was so clearly hurt.
Wait, what do you mean another woman?
Because Pamela Anderson's sex tape was released without her approval.
Yes.
And that like really hurt her. Like she was very fucked up from that. It was like devastating to her.
Yeah.
And then she like later goes on and marries a guy who did that same thing to another woman.
I don't know.
And to me, I'm kind of like, what? That's so strange.
Yeah.
But she describes this guy as like someone she, I guess, really enjoyed, but I don't know. She just seems to have relationships with sort of very damaged men, if that makes sense. I don't know. Look, Kid Rock divorced her after he saw her in Borat, because he was so upset that she was in Borat.
Sorry, I had to unplug my fridge. It was being really loud, and I think I kind of electrocuted my finger, but let's get into that later.
Wait, okay. I can't even process what you just said. I was just saying that Kid Rock divorced Pamela Anderson after he saw her in the Borat movie.
Really?
Like, he like couldn't handle it. He was just like so...
What was she doing in Borat?
She was just... I forget what her... Remember, she's like... I can't remember, to be honest with you.
I don't remember.
She has some bit with him, and she like didn't tell Kid Rock to surprise him because she thought it was funny. And then he like lost his mind at like a screening and like yelled at her, and then they divorced. And he would like say stuff like, look what the cat dragged in, when he would like see her at like premieres and stuff.
Yikes. I mean,
anyway, all these like evil dudes.
Yeah, she deserved a lot better than what she received, just because she's like, I don't know, objectifiable by our stupid standards.
Crazy.
But But yeah, I think she, when I watch her in interviews anyway, she just seems really genuine. And I'm glad that she is telling like her story versus just like letting that show exist.
Right.
And I think her sons are part of the documentary. Like they are the ones that wanted to make it. So I think that's kind of nice.
Yeah, I need to watch the doc. But they have an interesting, there's some like very funny like Nepo baby energy about her sons where she's like,
really?
They were able to invest all their money, like all this stuff where I'm like, well, like she talks about how, what great taste they have and how they're so smart and knew how to like invest in art. And I was like, well, you're their mom and yeah. Tommy Lee's their dad. Like,
also like they had the privilege to think about that instead of like needing to work. Like, I don't know.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of like a little, that part I'm kind of like, yeah, because they grew up with famous parents, which gave them that sort of upper hand in life. But yeah, you know, whatever. I mean, like, I'm not going to hate on them. I've never heard anything negative about those kids, but I just thought that was funny that
I love any kid that loves his mom or their mom. I just think that's like an indicator of goodness.
They seem well adjusted. I don't know. I mean, I don't know anything really about them other than they exist.
Yeah. But
they exist.
Should we pivot a little bit?
Yeah.
So
pivot.
Before we go to the first break, we'll go into the first break in a few minutes, but we're recording this on February 9th. The earthquake happened a couple days ago that hit Turkey and Syria.
Yeah.
And the death toll literally is changing like hour by the hour. Uh-huh. I recorded an episode for It Could Happen Here that's up right now if you guys want to listen to it. But when I recorded it, the death toll was like almost 5,000. And by the time I was done recording, I had to update it with another update being like, oh, it's 7,000 now. It was really hard to just like have these numbers go up and like, because they're not just numbers, obviously. But yeah, just putting the disclaimer of when we're recording this so you know the timeline that we are in as far as whatever happens next. Yeah.
Yeah.
I was really angry. I don't know if you saw that link. Bashar al-Assad literally bombed the area one of the areas that had been hit by the earthquake. He bombed them 2 hours after the earthquake happened.
Yeah.
Like, what a fucking monster. I just cannot comprehend that level of monstrosity. I don't understand. I don't understand.
It's evil. It's just pure evil, right?
Like, what is the point? Like, I don't understand the point of like wanting to have control of people that aren't there anymore because you killed them, and like a place that you're destroying. You know what I mean? I don't understand the rationale behind that. Like, what do you get out of that?
Nothing. He's just like unwell. Like, he's just trying to just kill everything and everyone around him. It's like, he's like, oh no, better like, I don't know, continue to destabilize people's existence.
It's just really, just the level of monster is just, I thought it couldn't get any worse, and then it did, because he bombed it after 2 hours after. I just can't get over that. But anyway, in doing that episode for It Could Happen Here, I was doing some research, and so I thought we would just talk through a little bit about the earthquake itself, and maybe when we come back I can tell you why exactly earthquakes happen all the time in Turkey. So
yeah,
BRB.
Mother's Day is right around the corner, and in true She Pivots fashion, we're highlighting moms who've dedicated their lives and their pivots to supporting mothers. The iconic Christy Turlington will join us to talk about launching Every Mother Counts after pivoting from her 90s supermodel days. And later, the co-CEOs of Baby to Baby will share how they're addressing the needs for millions of babies and moms. So tune in and subscribe to She Pivots. New episodes out every Wednesday. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV True Crime Podcast, To Live and Die in LA. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world, and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turned sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart's Outspoken Network for a year, and what a year it has been. Every weekday, I navigate our rapidly changing world alongside our series of fabulous expert guests. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Woke not just to the latest headlines, but also to the collective power we all have. Woke to the need to build community with those around us. Woke to how to avoid burnout, and woke to the ways we can all find joy in the madness. Make Woke AF Daily with Danielle Moody your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. And tune in to hear the ways I am working to stay grounded amidst it all. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, we are back. Okay, so earthquakes are actually really common in Turkey. The one that happened a couple days ago for us, it was a 7.8 earthquake, which is very high. And then there were a lot of aftershocks after that. So there was a really big aftershock that was 7.5. And that difference of only 0.3 is extremely rare, because usually aftershocks are at least like 1.2 magnitudes lower than the original earthquake.
Right.
So that of in and of its own is already like this natural rare disaster. And I didn't know this until I was like reading about earthquakes, but all aftershocks are individual earthquakes. But mm-hmm. if they're not stronger than the original, then they're still aftershocks. So according to seismologists, this is like a really unusually strong occurrence to have the aftershock be only 0.3 magnitudes lower. Because that's just like the damage that the first one caused, literally just all over again. There's not a lot of difference between that, which is really fucking scary.
Right.
So as of Tuesday, there were at least 125 aftershocks. Mm-hmm. And a lot of them are expected to be like, they're a lot of them can still happen for the next weeks or even months. But when I was researching this yesterday, apparently 5.0 and 6.0 aftershocks are like still possible, even after a couple of days. So that's how intense an earthquake is. And I saw all these photos of like literally the street like split open, and you can just like, it looks like you can see the core of the earth. It just really was very unsettling what like an earthquake does. And I know they're like kind of common in like where we live, but it's really fucking scary when you think about it. It's just like opening up the fucking earth. This earthquake was one of the largest ever recorded in Turkey's history, and it was the region's strongest earthquake in nearly a century. So in 1939, there was an earthquake of the same magnitude that killed 30,000 people. Right now, as of this recording, the death toll has reached 20,000 for us. And I mean, that's terrifying and horrifying all on its own. But earthquakes of this magnitude are very rare, with fewer than 5 occurring each year on average, like anywhere in the world.
Right.
And 7 earthquakes with a magnitude 7.0 or greater have struck Turkey in the past 25 years, but Jesus. The one that happened was the most powerful. And obviously, like, because it was so powerful, these aftershocks were felt in Lebanon and Israel and Cyprus and even Egypt. But there's a reason why earthquakes are so frequent in Turkey, and that's because Turkey sits on fault lines. And in the past, these earthquakes have caused like deadly landslides. And it's no stranger to strong earthquakes, because Turkey is situated right on these like tectonic plate boundaries. Uh-huh. And these two massive tectonic plates, the Arabian and the Eurasian, they meet underneath Turkey's southeastern provinces. And it's like hundreds of miles long on either side. And so what happened with this earthquake is basically this fault line slipped. Like, the seismologist literally said the earth slipped. and they refer to this event as a strike slip, when the plates are touching and all of a sudden they split, or they slide, and all of a sudden they slide sideways. And in a strike slip, the plates move horizontally rather than vertically. And this matters because buildings don't want to go back and forth. And then the secondary waves begin to go back and forth as well. So the earth is just like, and everything on top of it is just like, this doesn't feel good. And then, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I don't know. Learning about all of that and just how common, I didn't know how common they were, to be honest, in Turkey until I started reading about it. But that's so fucking scary. It must have been so fucking scary. I can't even imagine.
Yeah. And I mean, enough to basically destroy the foundation of a lot of different buildings, like
very historical buildings too.
Yeah, I've never been in an earthquake that big before in my life. Like, to feel the earth literally crumbling structures that you have viewed as almost like these sort of untouchable pieces of architecture, because, you know, it's like wild. You never just see you do every once in a while, like very rarely, but you don't just see buildings just fall that are not being demolished, you know, except for that one, I believe it was in Miami or somewhere in Florida where that apartment complex fell. Like, very rarely are you able to witness like such an intense sort of structural shift that then, you know, brings concrete down. Does that make sense? Like, it's so
it makes sense.
Devastating to think
that's how powerful it is.
Two different countries are just like rocked by this. And one country that really has no help, like has no allies willing to go in and help the people because their own leader or whatever dictator doesn't care about it. I mean, it's just like,
it's really fucked. And it's also
like, it's very fucked. And it's like, what does one do?
Yeah. It's also just so heartbreaking because ever since 2011, when the like quote unquote Syrian civil war started, I always have a problem talking, like calling it that for some reason, because it doesn't feel like a war. It was really unbalanced. But Syria has been in the process of like trying to rebuild itself. So one, the buildings weren't exactly in great condition to begin with. They had been bombed. They had been trying to be rebuilt. The foundations weren't strong. And I mean, Aleppo in particular was really hit hard by the regime in particular, like during the civil war. And it's one of the most historical, beautiful places ever. And so much of that history is gone. And especially after this earthquake, even more damage is done to all these like just essential historical sites.
Right.
And I talked to my mom because we have family in Syria and they're good as of now.
That's good.
But she was saying that one of these, one of her friends, he was telling them, like they have a group chat, her and her siblings. And in the group chat, he was saying he was asleep in his bed and then the earth started shaking. His son was really scared. So he ran up to him and they started hugging each other. He was trying to calm his son down. And he kept saying, it'll be over soon, it'll be over soon. And then the roof started crumbling on top of them and they like ran outside and they just like saw the building fall. And then there were so many other people also outside. Like everyone was just like in the streets. No one was, after the earthquake like, even settled down, my mom was saying that like no one is going inside their homes. No one is going inside anything. They're just like in the streets. And it's so cold over there right now. It's very, very, very cold.
Yeah.
So I mean, that's like one experience out of like thousands of experiences. So I can only, I mean, and there are just so many like really heartbreaking videos of the children that are trapped underneath the rubble. There was a newborn baby literally born in the rubble. Her umbilical cord was still attached to her mom, who died giving birth and or during the earthquake. And the baby girl is the only one to survive out of her whole immediate family. And she's alive right now getting treatment. But like, I just, like, that's just, like, a different level of like, devastation. I can't even comprehend. Yeah. I can't even comprehend it.
Yeah, no, God, even just the photos of, like, people holding their children's hands.
Yeah, that one really, there are so many probably examples of that. But, yeah, those photos are really, really hard to look at. But I know, like, at least we have photos to show people, like, this is what's happening. At the same time, they're hard to look at. It's just, like, a, whatever, It's part of it, I guess. But I hope they're always hard to look at, is my point. I don't want us to ever get desensitized to that, especially if they're like not white people. Yeah. And I think some people are desensitized to non-white people being traumatized. So I hope it always isn't. I hope no one gets numb to all of this, I guess is what I'm trying to say. But yeah, you mentioned that Syria doesn't have as much help as Turkey, and that's because, well, the infrastructure in Turkey is much better. It has better ties and better, much better ability to bring in resources than Syria does. Mm-hmm. This is in large part because of sanctions. And I was learning about all of this as I was going, but in 1979, the United States listed Syria as a state sponsor of terrorism. And ever since then, it pursued sanctions as a primary tool in its policy towards Syria. Mm-hmm. The George W. Bush administration, they issued a series of sanctions under executive orders that were aiming to limit Syria's destabilizing influence in Iraq at the time. And then, after the 2011 uprising, the Barack Obama and Donald Trump administrations both sanctioned the Assad regime on an unprecedented scale for mm-hmm. its gross human rights violations against its people. And all of this culminated in the passing of the CSAR Act in 2019. And the CSAR Act allows primary and secondary sanctions targeting both those who commit the sanctionable offenses and those who enable them. And what's crazy is that sanctions are supposed to like motivate the leader to change things, like maybe put him under so much pressure that like he has to alter his behavior. Obviously, that didn't fucking work with Bashar al-Assad or his entire fucking regime, because instead of doing that, he just killed his own people and like made them suffer, if not kill them. So these sanctions have made life really hard in Syria, especially since 2011. There was a UN-appointed independent human rights expert that went to Syria in November of 2022, like 3 months ago. And she had this whole report about why the United States needs to lift these sanctions like immediately, and how they are perpetuating and exacerbating the destruction and trauma suffered by ordinary citizens. And this is in November 2022. This is pre-earthquake. So this is like where they were starting off, you know, like 90% of Syria was already like under the poverty line. So then adding a fucking earthquake of this magnitude, they didn't even get a chance to recover, and they weren't going to get a chance just because of these sanctions. But knowing that's the starting point, and then these earthquakes struck, is just really heartbreaking to me, because I don't know, it just doesn't seem fair. I know there's no such thing as fair in life, but it just doesn't seem fair.
No, I agree. It doesn't seem fair at all.
Yeah. This human rights expert, by the way, her name is Elena Dohan, and this is one of her quotes in her report. She had a 12-day visit to Syria, and this is when she presented this detailed information on the catastrophic effects that sanctions were having on all aspects of Syrian life. She included that 90% of Syria's population is living below the poverty line, and the access to food, water, electricity, shelter, cooking and heating fuel, transportation and healthcare, it is very, very limited. And clean water in particular is very hard to have access to in Syria right now. And that only increases health problems and health diseases. And especially the Syrian children, there is this quote from UNICEF that I thought was important. But this quote says, "Children in Syria continue to face one of the most complex humanitarian situations in the world, a worsening economic crisis, continued localized hostilities after more than a decade of grinding conflict, mass displacement, and devastated public infrastructure that have left 2/3 of the population in need of assistance. Waterborne diseases pose another deadly threat to the children and families affected." And yeah, I don't know, it's just not fucking fair. I know it's not supposed to be fair, but whatever. I just, my brain can't really get over it.
I get it.
And Ms. Dohan in her report, she was talking about how even like the lack of availability of medicines and specialized medical equipment and just like spare parts and everything make it really hard to even develop water distribution correctly, or even just like the infrastructure isn't there and there's no tools to build it. And in November, pre-earthquake, there were 12 million Syrians experiencing food insecurity. Like 12 million Syrians already in need of food. And she urged the immediate lifting of these sanctions. And one of her last, like, these two quotes I'll read from her. She said, "All unilateral sanctions severely harm human rights and prevent any efforts for early recovery, rebuilding, and reconstruction. No reference to good objectives of unilateral sanctions justifies the violation of fundamental human rights. The international community has an obligation of solidarity and assistance to the Syrian people." And there was one view that she is quoted. She quoted this one view that apparently she had heard a lot when she was in Syria. And she said, "I saw much suffering, but now I see the hope die."
Mm.
Like, that's the starting point.
Yeah.
I don't know.
That's devastating.
Yeah. And that's November, 3 months ago. So they already were in such need of assistance. And after this earthquake, these sanctions are making it really hard to get the proper aid into Syria, which is just, like, fucked up. My mom is a big fan. Most Syrians are big fans of the White Helmets. The White Helmets are a volunteer organization based in Syria, made up of Syrians. And they're one of the main people that were attempting to reconstruct Syria during and after the war. And they're one of the main people on the ground right now, getting people out of the rubble and trying to avoid as many casualties as possible and curb as much as possible, which is, like, a hard thing to do in the first place. But they're one of the main sources that we have talking about the earthquake in Syria. And they were saying that hundreds of families are still trapped in the aftermath of the earthquake,
right,
especially in rebel-held territories. So northwest Syria is... Idlib is in northwest Syria. Idlib is one of the main cities that is still held by rebels.
Uh-huh.
And so there's already, like, a bunch of conflict in that area, which is why fucking Bashar probably bombed them immediately, which is... I just can't... Whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so there's already this, like, point of contention in that region anyway. And Turkey, there are a lot of Syrians in Turkey as well. There are, I think Turkey is, like, the population of Syrian refugees in Turkey, I think, is around, like, 6.9 million. And it was the country that, like, how do I put this? Out of all the countries in the world, Turkey was the one that has the most Syrian refugees. Like, they allowed the most Syrian refugees out of every country in the world. So there's already, like, a huge Syrian population there. There's already, like, a population situation, I guess. And there are a lot of refugee camps in Turkey. There are a lot of Palestinian refugee camps as well in Syria. So there are so many people affected by all of this. And one spokesperson from the White Helmets said, "Our teams responded, and until now, many families are under the rubble. We're trying hard to help all the casualties. Northwest Syria is a disaster area. We need help from everyone to save our people." So,
gosh.
Yeah. And last month, pre-earthquake, the UN Security Council agreed to allow aid into northwest Syria from Turkey across one border crossing, Bab al-Hawa. So this is just last month. They allowed this one border crossing opening because Syria had been resistant to allowing aid into that region because it's held by rebels.
Right.
And this area is it houses 4 million people at least, if not, like, much more than that.
Mm-hmm.
And Syria was resistant to helping these more than 4 million people because it regards the aid as undermining Syrian sovereignty and reducing its chances of, like, ever winning back control of the region. So that's another example of just, like, the lack of humanity in this regime. Like, you're not allowing aid to help 4 million of your people because one day you want to have control of them again and that land again. Like, my brain is just, like, can't compute that level of terror and evil that you have to be to do that.
There's a lack of humanity. It doesn't really make any sense. Like, I don't even know how to process, like,
mm-hmm.
what people like Bashar al-Assad, like, think.
Yeah.
Like how...
And it's crazy because, like, we're all human, right? Like, at some level, all of us are capable of doing everything that any other human is capable of doing. Does that make sense? Like,
yeah.
We all have the capacity to be that evil because that's an example of a human being that evil. And that's what's really scary to me is, like, I can't comprehend it, but obviously it's true for people for some humans to go in that direction. And that is so terrifying. I mean, the same things can be said about the Nazis and Hitler. Like, they were humans as well. They have the same capabilities of these people and vice versa. And I just think that is like a mind fuck all on its own. Like, they're not, because they're not monsters. At the end of the day, they're not monsters. They're fucking humans.
Yeah.
And they're doing this to other humans. Yeah. Let's take our last break so I can just like drink some water and take a breather. BRB.
Mother's Day is right around the corner, and in true She Pivots fashion, we're highlighting moms who've dedicated their lives and their pivots to supporting mothers. The iconic Christy Turlington will join us to talk about launching Every Mother Counts after pivoting from her 90s supermodel days. And later, the co-CEOs of Baby to Baby will share how they're addressing the needs for millions of babies and moms. So tune in and subscribe to She Pivots. New episodes out every Wednesday. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV true crime podcast, To Live and Die in LA. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turns sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. New year, new name, new energy, but...
same old us. Oh, yeah.
And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. But that's not all. We will also have special guests to add their thoughts on the topics, as well as break down different political issues with local activists in their community. If you like to be informed and to expand your thoughts, listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
And we are back. We're talking about the earthquakes in Syria and Turkey.
I want to have just a quick correction. The amount of refugees that Turkey has taken in is 3.6. I like doubled that amount. Wow. It's 3.6 million Syrian refugees, which is still a lot of refugees.
It is.
But it's more than any other country in the world. And this is according to the UN Refugee Agency. And this refugee agency runs one of its largest operations in the city of Gaziantep, which is where the earthquake happened, essentially. It was 20 miles away from this like major city. So the nature of disasters like this, it's normal for casualties to come in and like increase exponentially in the days and weeks that follow. The World Health Organization warned that the number of casualties are likely to increase as much as 8 times as rescuers find more victims in the rubble. They've been combing through mountains of rubble and freezing and snowy temperatures to find survivors, and the weather conditions just make everything like that much more hard and dangerous and painful.
Right.
And again, like we always see the same things with earthquakes, that the initial reports of the number of people that have died or have been injured are only going to increase quite significantly in the week and weeks that follow. And mentioning the border issues pre-break, a lot of countries have called to ease the Syrian border controls to offer aid. And like Greece, for example, offered aid to Turkey being like, we have to help each other when we're in need. But it didn't offer help to Syria very like blatantly, being like, this is not a geopolitical reason, but it just makes things harder. There's no official in Syria helping anyone receive aid. And they have a point. It does make it harder to even like communicate with a country that is so unable to empathize or communicate from that like leadership level, if you want to call it that. But well, there have been countries that have committed aid to both Syria and Turkey, a lot more to Turkey, but there have been countries that have done both, like a Palestinian, the Palestinian Red Cross, I believe, sent a bunch of teams over there. Even Israel sent teams to Syria, which I think is pretty crazy because they're kind of at war. Like they're still bombing each other in certain areas. So part of me is just like, okay, sure. I'll go along with the charade because we want the help. Sure, fine. I'll get it from anywhere. But it is a little bit ironic that they're also contributing to the destruction of Syria. And then they're like, oh, we should help now. Because I think it looks good on paper. I should stop before I get too far about that theory. But a lot of countries have been sending aid. Like China said it would send 40 million yuan, which is like the equivalent of $5.9 million worth of aid to Turkey. And they're coordinating efforts with Syria for supplies.
Yeah.
The Dalai Lama committed sending to rescue and relief efforts. Taiwan increased its donation to Turkey from 200,000 to 2 million.
Wow.
And Indonesia supplied aid to Turkey. Canada committed 7.5 million to earthquake relief. Pakistan sent teams to Turkey. Mm-hmm. Again, the Palestinian Red Cross, not Red Cross, Red Crescent teams and the Palestinian International Cooperation Agency, they sent teams to Syria and Turkey. South Korea offered $5 million worth of aid to Turkey. And a Hungarian rescue team also sent people to Turkey. Most of these places are sending people to Turkey, and Turkey has sustained the brunt of this earthquake. I don't want to talk too much about how Syria is suffering, because Turkey is obviously suffering as well. Their casualty numbers are much higher. The only difference is that they're able to receive aid and help much easier. And so I think that's what is frustrating to me, is that it's just more disastrous, it seems, on the Syrian side on that kind of level. Because I'm glad that Turkey is getting all of this aid, of course. But I saw this tweet that I really agreed with today, and it's from at Dialectic Hip Hop. Shout out to you. He said, I'll never forget how easily they raised $1 billion within 2 days for the Notre Dame Cathedral fire. But for Syria, now the same countries are saying how challenging everything is with getting aid here and there and funds here and there. You can't even send donations directly because of the sanctions. And that's a really good fucking point. Like, fucking building on fire. Historical, yes, but like still a building in comparison to human life. $1 billion were raised in 2 days. That's wild.
That's a tale as old as time.
That's so wild to me.
How Syrian refugees are treated versus like white refugees. It's like, you really?
Yeah.
And by white refugees, I literally mean just like Ukrainian refugees. Like recently, like how quick we were to be like, please help Ukrainians versus like, oh, Syrians live on an island off of Greece. That's like with intense.
Yeah.
But like Ukrainians were being like rehoused immediately and like, you know, welcomed with open arms. It's just, it's shocking like how people treat depending on where you're from. Yeah. And there's just like no shame. It's like you can be like, well, that's pretty fucked up. And everyone's like, yeah.
Noted. Continue. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's really, I mean, from a Syrian's perspective, it was really, eye-opening to see how people were so eager to post about Ukraine, or like all these celebrities, even like certain like talk show hosts and everything were just talking about it in a way I had never seen them talk about Syria. So that was really fascinating to me, because I think it is at some level it boils down to like, oh, this person looks like me. I empathize with them more as a human than maybe these people who I'm used to seeing suffer or I'm used to seeing be traumatized. Like, that's just what's happening over there. So they're like immune to it. So it is a little bit unsettling, just the stark difference. And again, I think Ukrainians deserve all the support in the world. I'm just talking about when you think about the disproportion of reaction, you can't help but notice it, especially as like a Syrian or Iranian or a Palestinian person that like we're so used to being kind of just like shafted on the side when it comes to like any kind of coverage. So when you see other people getting so much coverage, it doesn't like you can't help but be like, oh, okay, like noted. Like I don't register as equal to you.
God, it's so devastating. I mean, like, I don't even like have much to think or say other than it's just devastating. It's like you feel so lost. You feel like there's nothing you can do. And you're like, well, they don't care about us.
Mm-hmm.
They don't care about anyone who's like, I guess, Arab.
Yeah.
You know, there's just no care in the world for us because we're from like a certain region of the world. And it's true what you said about like maybe we have more empathy because it's like I do. When I see like Palestinian children being murdered, I'm like, that could be my cousin. Like, this could be my family. Like,
Why is
it okay? And people don't care because they don't see themselves in it. And it's very, I don't know. It is very unsettling.
It's unsettling. Also, it's crazy because they want to say that we're white here sometimes. You know what I mean? Like, we're not white when it matters. We're white based on when they determine that we're white. You know what I mean? Like, it's just like... I don't know. But that mentality of like hopelessness, it's like what that quote of like, I saw much suffering and now I see the hope die. Especially Syrians since like 2011, with no one helping them for over a fucking decade. My mom was saying that like, Syrians are used to this hopeless like feeling. And my mom was just like, I don't know. I just talked to my mom a lot about all this stuff. So that's why I keep referencing my mom. But she was saying that, like Syrians have no one. Like, we're the only ones helping each other. Like, the people on the ground who are Syrian are helping each other. Like, the White Helmets is a good example of that. That are just, like, Syrian volunteers coming together and rescuing each other. But her sentiment is, like, the same that it's been for years now. Because a lot of Syrians have resigned themselves to the fact that, like, oh, no one fucking cares. Mm-hmm. This is hopeless. It's going to stay hopeless. Like fuck y'all. And so I think that was my mom's perspective, and I think she reminded me of just like the level of hopelessness that we were starting at in the first place.
Right.
It's
true.
But yeah.
How do we go on?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't really talk about like a lot of like personal family stuff because I feel like talking about family is like not necessary all the time. But I do think it's important to like give you one example of how sanctions affect people, because this is one family, my family, that's affected by it among so many millions of families. But
yeah.
I had a cousin who he was a child and he had developed child brain cancer.
Mm-hmm.
And they were based in Hama where they live. But Hama doesn't have the proper equipment, medical equipment or hospitals or even chemo. Like they didn't have anything to help this child.
Mm-hmm.
And his mom would take him and travel to Damascus where better things were available. But at the time and probably still now, there are so many road closures. So a trip that would take like 2 hours and a half can take like 9 hours.
Mm-hmm.
But she would still go because it's her fucking son and she wanted to save him. And so that happened for a long time. But at the end, they reached a point where like, oh, we can't do anything else. We're limited here.
Yeah.
And like the rest of his like really young life was just like suffering and hurt. Oh. And he was the happiest kid, which is just like the most ironic part of all of it. Like he was just one example of a child not having the proper access that they should have to, I don't even know if he would have, I mean, maybe like, I'm not saying sanctions killed this beautiful child, but I'm saying
he could have had more of a chance.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm sure so many stories are like that from Syrians and I mean, probably everywhere that has limited access to that. Probably Palestinians have a lot of stories of that same kind of like human level where it just comes down to like, oh, our lack of access to things really limits our ability to survive in like practical ways and like non-practical ways. And so yeah, when you hear like, oh, like they don't have equipment or medical supplies, like that's one example of what that could mean. It's not just like syringes or whatever the shit you're maybe thinking about, but like it's deeper than that. And especially now, the hospitals are so overcrowded. And I mean, the hospitals that are still standing, a lot of hospitals have been demolished by the earthquake. But the hospitals that are still standing are like overflowing. There is not enough room. There's not enough resources. There were two maternity hospitals that had to be evacuated because of the earthquake. So like, where do they go? There's nowhere they can go.
Yeah.
People have been going to like empty schools and just like empty buildings for shelter. But even that is scary because no one wants to go fucking inside, but it's cold. So there's all these things that just make it so hard to even just like move forward. So I'm hoping the only silver lining to this is that maybe the sanctions get lifted and Syrians can receive aid in the way that they're supposed to receive aid. But who knows? I don't know. I don't have a lot of hope. So I'm only laughing because it's sad. That's how I cope. But yeah, who knows? And the number is going to keep climbing. Like right now, when we're recording this, I'm sure by the time this comes out, it's so much more than 20,000, because literally 2 days ago it was 7,000. I just like, I don't know. My heart is just so broken for all those families and all those people that are suffering and have lost people if they aren't, you know what I mean? It's just,
yeah.
I don't know, man. Fucking shit sucks.
Yeah. It's not, there's this like distance where you just, it's like you can't do anything. You can do nothing but just talk about it and try and like help from afar, but it just feels so distant. Like you're like, I don't know.
I mean, that's one of the reasons we stopped talking about the news, right? Like as often. It's
yeah, because I feel like we've had this conversation like 1,000 times of like, oh, nobody cares. And nobody cares. Nobody cares. Why are we like screaming into the void?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like you're always just going to let the people who you consider not worthy die. You're going to just continue to other and sort of create that social hierarchy of like who matters. And it's nobody cares. And you know what?
Yeah. I just want the same respect as a fucking building. You know?
Yeah.
The Notre Dame shouldn't be more important than human life. I don't care how fucking old it is and how beautiful it is. It's still a fucking building.
In a very racist country.
Yes, exactly.
Pelly, where MLE thrives.
Yeah.
It's kind of, I don't know, man. The good thing is that climate change doesn't discriminate and it will kill us all.
Yep. Yeah,
it'll kill white people equalizer. As quick as it kills anyone else. So maybe it's for the best because this world fucked up, built on so much structural racism that maybe it's time for the big wave in the sky to sweep us away.
Hey, I would rather us all go at once. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, I know. It's true. Instead of like an earthquake in the, you know, in Turkey and Syria, killing all those people, it's like,
just let an asteroid hit us and just like, let's go.
Just swoop us out of here. Stop the pain and suffering.
Yeah, we really took a fucking wrong turn somewhere. Really fucking fucked up. We being the human race, not you and I, obviously. We're perfect.
We're perfect.
But
perfect angels, cherubs, if you will.
Yes, cherubs. We're so cheruby and cute.
We're cheruby. Cheruby.
Maybe I should call him Bunny Cheruby. Cheruby. She's asleep. I love her. Okay, never mind. I think that's like an episode, right?
Can I recommend a TV show to you that you probably won't watch, but I want to recommend it to
I watch the things you tell me to watch. No, I finished Better Things today.
This isn't narrative. This is reality TV.
Okay. I need a new show.
It's called The Traitors.
I've never even heard of it. Okay, continue.
It's a British show that they made like an American version of. Spinoff? I don't know. And it's called The Traitors, and it takes place in Scotland. It's hosted by Alan Cumming. And they take a bunch of other... Now, I don't know if the British version does this way, but the American version that is currently on Peacock did it this way, where they took a bunch of different reality television stars from like Survivor, Big Brother, Below Deck, Real Housewives, Shaws of Sunset, Summer House, and put them in a house, a castle, if you will. It is actually a castle.
Oh, wow.
With like civilians. And so they're all teamed up, and three of the people in the house, they don't know who, are considered traitors, and they basically have to spend their whole time trying to figure out who the traitors are in the house. And every episode, they have to vote someone out at the end, and also the traitors murder one person at a time every night. So people are being eliminated, and as people go, the people who aren't traitors, they're called the faithfuls, have to try and figure out who the traitors are, who are literally living amongst them, and they have no idea who's who, and they're trying to figure it out. And it's riveting television.
I mean, it's so tense.
It's crazy. And then you have people from Survivor and Big Brother who are, in my opinion, master manipulators, like born for this kind of stuff. Like, there's a woman from Survivor, Legend Siri, who her abilities, incredible. Like, just, I can't, there's like a challenge they have to do where and also, by the way, they do challenges during the day to kind of, I guess, to sort of create tension and also see who's a team player. It's just basically to like vibe everyone out. So you can start to be like, they're acting weird. Are they a traitor? So it's just like energy.
So we don't know who the traitors are either.
No, we do know who the traitors are. That's the crazy part. So you're watching them being like, this guy's a traitor. And you're like, he's not a traitor. They're fucking up. He's not a traitor. And you're just like watching them be like, I think it's them because they were acting really funny at breakfast. And you're like, wow, you people are so wrong, you know? So it's like that. So you're like literally watching from a bird's eye view. And it's fascinating because it is like this study of the human, like how people are reacting to each other. And but then you have these people from like Survivor and Big Brother who like one of the guys has like one Big Brother, which is like, that means you're like, and if you haven't seen Big Brother, it's basically, it's a show about like alliances and like getting other people voted out, like kicked off the house, out of the house. And it's a
Do you win Big Brother though? Like,
you have to be the last one standing basically in the house.
But so someone has to vote that you're the last one?
There's more of a process to that.
Sorry, I mean, sorry.
It's not like one person's like, it's you. There's also like audience or viewer participation. It's a little bit more.
Is it like based on like if you like that person? Like, is it based on anything other than just like someone?
It's just
who
can play the game. It's a very it's strategic, like, like there was the season recently where all the black people like teamed up in an alliance and got every white person kicked off.
That's
and
amazing.
It was like an incredible feat.
That's amazing.
And to like have a Big Brother season where it's just all black people left, and they were like, well, we figured that out. But then, you know, you slowly have to be like, okay, now who's next, you know? So it's like, and then all of a sudden your alliances have to then change, which is like, anyway, we're not talking about Big Brother. Now you got me talking about Big Brother.
Are you recommending this, the original one or the American one?
I'm recommending currently the American one, though I've heard the original is also really good, but I haven't watched the original yet. So I can't in good faith recommend that to you just yet. Okay. Let me go and do a viewing. But I think the Traitors is very interesting.
Yeah.
Well, it is. But they have them do things that I'm like, is this legal? Or like ethical, where they'll be like, you're going to be buried alive. And like, they'll put him in a box and then he'll be buried underground.
That is one of my worst fears of all time.
This is like a reality show. Someone who like is famous because on their reality show, they go to the Hamptons every summer and drink. And you're like, good luck. And then you're like up against a survivor. And you're like, yeah, who's going to survive? You know, like, you see the weed, you know, and then there's like a Real Housewife. And you're like, okay. And then there's like Reza from Shaws of Sunset, who's like walking around being like, these floors are not original to the castle. And you're like, yeah, Reza, we know. So it's like so many different personalities. And then there's just like a neonatal ER nurse. You know, like there's like.
Because there's also civilians mixed in.
Yes, because there's civilians mixed in too. I think also throw off the vibe. So you just don't know. So you're like, oh, so I watched Brandy Glanville on Real Housewives Beverly Hills for years. I can't trust her. But then this nurse.
Right.
I can trust her, but you don't know. So it really throws off the balance of everyone's like thoughts, you know. And then, so then they have to do these competitions and then to learn more. And then then they'll be like, oh, we have to vote who's the most two-faced. So it's like you're like people just like saying shit to your face and you're like,
okay. Oh my God.
Yeah, it's so brutal. But it also, you just see how people react. But that's all in order to get people to act a certain way so you can like feel if they're a traitor or not.
Wow.
But then you also have people like I said before from like Survivor, like Siri, who's like untouchable, where like they have one of the challenges was from like a church from like a mile away. These other half, they split them apart. Half the contestants have to play a bunch of bells to a certain tune. And then a people a mile away have to guess what song they're playing.
Holy shit.
And then Siri's being like, that's like Oda Lang. Oh, that's this. And you're like, dude, the fuck? What are you? What? Off bell tones? It's almost like you're trying to guess like the MIDI tone song and you're like, whoa. Anyway, so like that's the stuff. And then, so it's a very, I like it. I think it's like so fun and so crazy. And then also, a nice distraction from the real world. Cause if I was in a traitor situation, I would crumble.
Really?
I don't know if I could do it.
I feel like there's a part of me that is a good liar. I think I can get that part out for the right motivations.
But you have to be like, oh my God, who could it be? You know, like if you're a traitor.
Right. It's like a whole other level of acting.
But then there's like some of the traitors, you're like legends. They know what they're doing. And then there's like one traitor where I'm like, dog, you are on the edge of being caught. Your behavior is crazy. Like you're being like, yeah, I agree. Who could it be? And you're like, okay, clearly it's this guy. The fact that he's lasted as long as he has so far is like shocking to me. He's so annoying. Anyway, you'll know immediately who it is once you watch the show, and you'll be like,
okay, I will watch the first episode today. I promise. I have to watch either that or The Last of Us, and The Last of Us seems really intense. I haven't started The Last of Us, so.
I think it is very intense. I mean, I haven't watched it at all because there's a scary aspect to it, and I can't do it.
Yeah, so I don't know if I'm going to do that. I feel like part of me feels guilty watching it because I never finished the first game, and part of me is I don't deserve to watch this. That's all in my head. But that's why I haven't watched it yet. But I will watch Traitors first. I think I need that in my life.
It's a good brain bleach, if you will.
Well, that's a good way to put it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like that we rounded this out with like some fun talk at the end. You know what I mean? Like there was some fun talk in the front. And that was this fun talk at the end. Just squeeze in some trauma in the middle. That's the episode. That's ethnically ambiguous.
And that's ethnically ambiguous.
So, should I wrap us out of here?
Wrap us up.
Okay, this is Ethnically Ambiguous, Ethnically Amb, A-M-B on Twitter, and Ethnically Ambig, A-M-B-I-G on Instagram. I am Shireen, it's Shirohiro on Instagram, and Shirohiro666 on Twitter.
I'm at Anna Hosnier on Twitter, and at Selling Hosnier on Instagram, and I have a Substack, sellinghosnier.substack.com. I just released a post about Michael Imperioli's...
I haven't read that one yet.
Architectural Digest Home Tour.
Should I watch it first and then read your thing?
Yeah, it starts with go stop reading and go watch this right now. And I linked it in my thing, so you can easily just click the link and go watch it.
Perfect.
It's 8 minutes, guys. Watch it and then just like read my very sort of like confused breakdown. And I don't want you, I mean, it could be perceived that I'm hating on it. It's more that I'm just like fascinated by the direction Michael Imperioli has decided to take this tour, which is just it's interesting. It's just interesting more than anything. I'm just drawn to the almost non-existence of it. And I can't even explain that. You just have to watch it and be like, huh?
Okay.
There's strong, and I write this in my piece, there's strong juxtaposition happening based off his energy and the home he's living in. Anyway, that's all I can say about that.
Okay. I'm intrigued.
Incredible work by everyone involved.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, writing a Substack about it, I'm sure it's fucking interesting.
I'm trying to only write about stuff that truly intrigues me and not, like, force stuff out of myself.
Yeah, I think that's the way to go when it comes to writing, for sure. Like, from a genuine place, anyway.
Something has to have me in a chokehold before I can really, really... And it took me a while to write this one. Like, I would write and then, like, just sit and be like, I have to come back to this. Like, I'm not actually ready to fully process my feelings on paper yet.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, I'm excited to dig into that after we wrap up, because I need to shut my brain off from reality.
It will help.
But thank you. I appreciate it. But that is the episode.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Ambiguous is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Like the police knew who he was before they got here.
From iHeart Podcasts.
The medical school dean at USC was leading a secret double life.
He's breathing right now?
Yes, he's absolutely breathing. I'm a doctor, actually.
A story about money, power, and corruption.
When people fall in line, they fall in line.
Looking back, I realized, oh, everyone knew.
I'm Paul Pringle, an investigative reporter for the LA Times. Listen to Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, I'm Jay Shetty, and I'm the host of the On Purpose podcast. And I had the opportunity to talk to one of Hollywood's major icons, Michael B. Jordan. In our conversation, Michael shares the highs, the lows, and everything in between, offering a genuine glimpse into his world.
The closest to getting what you want is always the hardest. People give up right before they get what they've always wanted to get.
Listen to On Purpose with Jay Shetty on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.